Welcome to our weekly Church on the Rock podcast. For more information, visit us at churchak.org, download our Church on the Rock AK app, or like us on our Facebook page. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy our weekly podcast.
Last week, we looked at the story of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead, and as a result of that miracle, uproar began to take place from the religious leaders, and plots were formed to kill both Jesus and Lazarus. Just a little while later, what's known as the Passion Week, which today begins, Jesus entered Jerusalem on a donkey. We know he cleared the temple, he taught, he debated with the religious leaders, he performed miracles, and then enjoyed a last dinner with the disciples, also known as the Last Supper. After that, he goes to the garden to pray with a couple of them, where he would then be betrayed by Judas. And guards would come to arrest Peter, and we know the famous story of Peter finally getting to prove himself and cutting the ear off with his sword of the high priest. And then Jesus is sent to stand trial. We're pretty familiar with the story, and more on that element this Friday in our Good Friday service. So normally on Palm Sunday, we dig into the actual entry and circumstances surrounding that day, and there's certainly deep value in doing so. But today, I want us to see something that often hides within the shadows of the story of this Passion Week, something that maybe we've heard reference to but not really understood the significance of it happening during this week, yet points directly to the purpose of Jesus' resurrection. First, I want to help us understand some of the tension and expectations that were surrounding this week. You see, the Jewish people wanted revolution. They'd wanted it for years and years. Rome was ruling Jerusalem, and the people were tired of taxes and very oppressive Roman rule. They wanted something new. You see, Jesus was doing things that were astounding the people. He was performing incredible miracles and profound miracle in raising Lazarus even, which made huge waves among the people. This caused a lot of people, including some of the religious leaders, to come to faith in Christ and join what's known as the Way. They became little Christians. And despite this being a good thing, it would lead to more tension between Jesus and the religious leaders. But the people were eager to be freed from Roman oppression. It was what the promised Messiah was going to do. And Jesus was their ticket. And you have the religious leaders, and they wanted silence. See, for Jesus to keep quiet, that's what they needed Jesus to do, is just calm down and go away. Stop making waves. They were concerned with one thing and one thing only, and that was the status quo of where they were at. They wanted to stay in power, and they were feeling pressure from above and below. From below, Jesus was making some audacious claims that threatened their religious norms. And he was performing these miracles. Essentially, he was gaining traction. The people began to proclaim him as king rather than submitting to these rigid religious leaders who were actually keeping people from experiencing God. In fact, Jesus told these leaders to their face that their father was the devil. I mean, you could see how this can begin to elicit some tension between the religious leaders. And now, since the Lazarus incident, many of them were starting to believe he was, in fact, the Messiah. But they also felt pressure from above, because the reality is that if this Jesus ruckus continued to divide the Jews, the Romans could come in and claim that a riot had started. And no one hated riots more than Rome. Despite what we assume, they did not. They were actually trying to keep peace. They weren't eager to go into war to have conflict. There was a group of Jewish people, zealots, who would elicit and create these tensions and these riots and stuff. But they did not enjoy them. Rome was not looking to create tension. In fact, the governors that were presiding over for Rome, they would kind of be evaluated based off of keeping the peace. So they did not want there to be conflict, because what would happen is that the Romans would come in, and the Romans viewed the Jewish people as dogs. They had zero respect for them. They did not like them, but they were barely tolerated. And they would come in and they would say, you know what, if you dogs can't keep the peace, we'll kick you out. And for the religious leaders, that was unacceptable for God's people in their own land. So they didn't want there to be this uprising. They wanted Jesus silenced because they were afraid of conflict with Rome and their own loss of power and control over the people. They wanted the status quo. And then we have the disciples in the mix of all this. They wanted a new political system with Jesus at the top and them right underneath. Most were disillusioned with the manipulative and the corruptive ways of the religious leaders. And now under Jesus, they had a chance to gain power and position. In fact, in Matthew 20, James and John's mother comes to Jesus and asks that her sons get the position to the left and the right of Jesus in his kingdom. And like any good mother, she wanted her sons to get ahead. It was a lot of political fighting among the disciples. And despite the countless times Jesus described his purpose to them, they still weren't getting the idea of what Jesus was actually here to do. So the disciples saw a leader who accepted them as outcasts and who would allow them to rule in the nation with him, a leader who cared for the common people. And they finally had an end. These were the people that were rejected, that were not allowed to go to basically seminary for Jewish people. They weren't allowed to go to synagogue. They were the ones at 13 who were kind of evaluating, go, you know what, you're going to be a fisherman. You're just going to be a laborer. You're going to be a construction worker. You're not joining this sect. And these were all these people, these common people who Jesus called. So finally they had an opportunity to be someone. So the religious or the people wanted a revolution. The leaders wanted him silenced and his disciples wanted position. And here we have the start of this week. Jesus entering in on a donkey, palms being laid, Hosanna being sung, people thinking all different things of what's going to happen, and the disciples excited because this is finally their moment. 3 years they've been eagerly waiting. What is this going to look like? What is the end game with Jesus? And now it's starting to happen, and there's tension and there's excitement ramping up, and the religious leaders are kind of stepping back, but some are also coming to faith and seeing these miracles, and there's tension among them and division among them, and this is a very tense week. Expectations were high. The climax of the whole Jewish nation was about to peak. Prophecies and promises were about to unfold, putting the Jews back in power of their own land, or so they thought. See, the rejected and outcasts of religious society, guys like Peter, James, Philip, Bartholomew, Andrew, they would finally be somebody. I mean, they would have done anything for Jesus. 3 years daily walking with this man, 3 years being called to be something, someone finally, instead of just these lowly people of society, he's calling them and he's their friend, he's their mentor. They're seeing him perform miracles that they've never seen. Even the religious leaders weren't seeing their own people do these things. And here's these nobodies, these commoners who are following this guy saying, I love you, I'll call you out. You want to be a fisher of men? Follow me. And Jesus is investing in these people, and these young men and women are are growing, and they're loving what is happening. And the guys are like, man, we got your back, Jesus. We got you. We got your six. Let's go. In this week, I want us to understand the value of where their hearts were at in this week. Can you imagine the excitement, especially for the disciples? I mean, these guys were getting ready for a full send with Jesus. This miracle working, bold speaking, wave making, storm calming, prophecy fulfilling Messiah, and they are his closest guys. Profound, exciting times, especially for personalities like Peter, who Jesus called and gave him the name of Rock. You're solid, you're Rock. So this brings us to our text for today. If you turn your Bibles to Matthew 26, we're going to pick it up in verse 30. And this is taking place during the Last Supper. Meanwhile, everyone's still kind of like, okay, what is the end game here? What's going to happen? During the Last Supper, they're still trying to figure out, okay, what's the angle here? We know there's going to be a new kingdom, but Jesus has to die, and so we're not really even sure what that's going to look like and whether we believe that should happen in the way it should. And Jesus has already at this point cleared the temple out. He's made a splash. He's been performing miracles, and now they're sitting down at this Last Supper. Matthew 26, beginning in verse 30, and when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives, and Jesus said to them, You will all fall away because of me this night. It's like, oh, wait a minute. That's not what we've been practicing. That's not what we've been thinking is going to happen. What do you mean, Jesus? He says, for it's written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee. Peter answered him, though they all fall away because of you, I will never fall away. Remember, I'm your rock. Jesus said to him, truly, I tell you this very night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. Peter said, I believe with all sincerity of heart, even if I must die with you, I will not deny you. And all the disciples said the same. Though they fall away, I never will. Are you seeing this position, this general heart that Peter has? Like, hey, look, they're going to, because we know they're not the rock. I'm the rock, Jesus. You've called me. I'm the one. I'm tough. I'm a fisherman. I'm this guy. Like, no, they might, but I will not. I am your man. Now, they were already in the garden at this point. And Peter had a sword on his side at this point. Peter was dead serious about going to prison or dying for Jesus. And little did he know he actually would later on in his life. But Peter was the man. He was the one who had Jesus at the back. Peter was the guy that when hands start getting thrown, you want him around. Because he doesn't care about the details. Questions will be asked later. He'll end up having your back. This is Peter. That's why Peter showed up with a sword. Jesus had already mentioned that one of them were going to betray him. And Peter's like, oh, well, I'll prove that that's not going to be me. Because they were all fighting him. Well, who is it? Who's going to betray Jesus? And Peter is this deeply loyal man. So he put his money where his mouth was by cutting off the ear of the high priest as they tried to arrest Jesus. What was Jesus talking about denying him? Obviously, we know that's not going to be me tonight. All you guys will, but look what I just did. Now, Peter had some rough edges. He needed some correcting, but this is the guy you want at the end of the day to have your back. This is Peter's time to shine. Have you ever had friends like that? You know when hands start getting thrown, details just don't matter. They're going to be there. This was Peter. This is who Peter was for Jesus. In fact, I would say that Peter's identity was wrapped up in being this for Jesus. So we move ahead a couple verses to Matthew 26, and then we pick it up in verse 69. This is after Jesus calms Peter down. He heals the ear. Jesus gets taken away to trial. In the garden is when Jesus actually said, hey, Peter, we don't need to do this. Man, if I wanted to, I can call legions of angels down to fight for me. Don't worry. I got this. Imagine Peter at that moment was like, what did I bring a sword for? Like what? I mean, he's telling me not to defend him. And he's telling me really that actually he could call legions down that could fight for him. Well, this is kind of weird. I thought I was going to be the guy. Verse 69. Now Peter was sitting outside the courtyard, and a servant girl came up to him and said, you also were with Jesus the Galilean. Now, Peter is following Jesus as he's being arrested. Peter's following him at a distance, and he finally comes into the courtyard, and there's this girl there, and she says, you were also with Jesus the Galilean, but he denied it before them all, saying, I don't know what you mean. And when he went to the entrance, a servant girl saw him, and she said to the bystanders, this man was with Jesus of Nazareth. And again, he denied it with an oath. I don't know the man. After a little while, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, oh, certainly you too are one of them, for your accent betrays you. Then he began to invoke a curse on himself and swear, doubling down on the lies. That's usually when anger comes out of us, right? I don't know the man. And immediately the rooster crowed. Peter, remember the saying of Jesus, just hours before this. Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. And he went out and wept bitterly. Peter, what happened? What happened, Peter? Were you not as strong as you thought? Were you not as strong as you wanted to be, as bold as you wanted to be? Did you act out of fear. I mean, how did you get from a sword into the guard in the garden to fearful and cowering down in front of this little girl, in front of these people who actually weren't even after you at the time? Peter, what happened? Were you caught off guard? Did you just have too much confidence in yourself, too much zeal of your own ability to do and be bold for Jesus? See, I think we are in real spiritual danger when we think that we're above and beyond failing. In fact, as I stand before you today, I've never in my history of my marriage ever desired, thought about, or wanted to cheat on my wife. But the reality is that given the right circumstances and the right time of life, that is a possibility. It is a healthy fear that we are not beyond complete and utter failure. And so what do? I do what Paul tells Timothy to do, is watch your life closely. Watch your life and doctrine closely. So I watch my life closely. But we are not above failure. And I think where Peter began making the mistake is he thought, look at all these other guys. And I get it. They weren't as rough and tough as Peter was. Okay, so maybe he thought, yeah, they probably will. Not me. I'm above it. And in the act in front of a little girl, he cowers down. He promised he'd be loyal even after Jesus warned him that Satan demanded to have him and sift him like wheat. I mean, that's a pretty massive presumption about his ability to follow Jesus in his own power. So here's what I want us to do for a minute this morning, for a second. I want us to reflect on something. And it might be difficult. It might even be dark and painful. But I really believe it will be profoundly powerful. I want you to think about and identify your worst failure in life. This isn't going to be public. We're not going to have public confessions or anything like that. This is just for you in your own mind right now. And I mean the failure that you weren't sure or maybe still aren't sure you can recover from. The worst possible failure. Failure that gave you that gut-wrenching regret. So we're going to take a couple seconds to reflect in silence. I want everyone, worship team, media, ushers, greeters, everyone, let's just be honest for a minute, because here's the reality. God already knows. And many of us live imprisoned by that regret, by that failure. So I just want us to identify it for a couple seconds this morning. Think about how it's affected your life. Think about the choices you make because you live having to manage that failure, having to manage the regret. I want you to put that aside for just a minute and we'll watch this video. How do you recover from your failure? Bitter weeping of utter failure. Complete loss of hope. Jesus, I let you down. I let my friends down. I let my family down. Again, I messed up so badly. There is no recovering from this one. There's definitely no way out. Have you ever felt that? Do you realize that Peter never got to make things right with Jesus before Jesus was crucified? I mean, sit in that guilt for a moment. Jesus is watching Peter. In fact, Luke tells us that Jesus looked and turned towards Peter right as the rooster crowed. And Peter didn't get to go up and be like, Jesus, I'm sorry. I know I didn't mean to. I don't know what happened. He never got to that sitting in the shame. He had to hide it away. Oh, that guilt. Seeing your friend, your best friend. Man, I'm the one that was supposed to make you proud. And now he's denied even knowing him, his friend, his companion, his mentor, his teacher. He turned his back on Jesus as Jesus is being led to his death. Peter is now seeing Jesus' death get closer and closer, and he's thinking about all this and this bitterness of weeping. We're not talking tears flowing. We're talking snot running, bitter weeping. He's thinking about this while Jesus is beaten and flogged, beard plucked and mocked, and Peter can't even make it right. No way out of this failure for Peter. And in the matter of a moment, this strong, powerful, committed, self-reliant Peter went from cutting off an ear in defense of Jesus to denying he ever knew and watching his friend be led to his death. I have failure in my life, some of which I can't go back and make right. Others I've been able to. So what's that failure, friends? What is that failure that when asked, came to mind? Feel imprisoned by it, stuck in the past, distant from God and others because of it? See, sometimes we just want God to fix whatever jam we find ourselves in. Like the Jewish people, when Jesus comes riding in, they saw Rome as the problem and Jesus' takeover as the solution. But the real problem was sin. The real problem, the real solution was Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection. It was a sin problem more than a political problem. We need to remember that in our day. And sometimes, like Peter, we fail and stumble in our sin. Whether it's deliberate or we find ourselves in one moment acting in self-reliance, self-confidence, and failure. We didn't start out that way. Maybe we had good motives and intentions and wanted to impress God with our works and impress God with who we are and ended up in a situation we never thought possible. Maybe we too were overly confident in our ability to walk a straight path and resist temptation. And now we believe we failed Jesus too much. We've gone too far, that we've done things we never thought possible. I mean, how could Jesus do anything with us or want anything to do with us? So Jesus dies and is resurrected. Brings us to John 21. Pick it up in verse 4. At this point, the crucifixion has happened. Peter's back to fishing. After all, what use is he now? The one thing he was wanting to do for Jesus, at the very last moment, he failed. So Peter's back to fishing. Verse 4, just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, do you have any fish?" They answered him, "No." He said to them, Cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." So they cast it. And now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. The disciple whom Jesus loved, which is John, therefore said to Peter, "It's the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. The other disciples came in the boat dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from land, but about 100 yards off. Peter doesn't even wait to row in. Can you imagine the excitement, the eagerness that Peter had to make it right, to see his friend again, to cast off the shame and the guilt of letting Jesus down in the worst possible way for Peter? He doesn't even wait to row back in. He just leaps and swims. Verse 9, when they got on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. And Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." And when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" In other words, are you more loyal than the others? Is your affection, is deep, unyielding affection and loyalty to me deeper than the others? Because that's what Peter had said it was just a little while earlier. Said, they might leave you, but my loyalty runs deeper. And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you," or "love you like a brother." He said to him, "Feed my lambs." He said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? It's interesting that this is the only other time in the Bible before Peter was called that Jesus actually refers to Peter as Simon, son of John. He said, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. See, Peter reaffirmed his love for Jesus three times on the beach, and there's a lot to this that we could take up a whole Sunday morning on. It's a study for another time, but basically Jesus asked him, are you completely and wholeheartedly committed to me, and do you love me like a brother? And Peter said, yes. And in response, Jesus appointed Peter to care for his sheep. See, what Jesus was doing is addressing Peter's failure without rubbing it in his face. Peter, remember you thought this before. Peter was broken. Peter had bled. There's a phrase you'll hear me use often as we get to be together more and more, and the phrase is this: if you live long enough, you'll bleed. You live long enough, you'll fail. You live long enough, you'll hurt. You live long enough, you'll let people down. And Jesus had come to Peter and brought this up, this self-reliance that Peter had on himself. And a couple days after, not even long after he had denied Jesus' meeting on the beach and asking him these different perspectives of love. And Jesus is saying, are you completely and wholeheartedly committed to me? See, Jesus met Peter in his failure. And Jesus came to Peter and he restored him. Where Peter denied Jesus by a fire, Jesus met him by a new one. On the shores where Jesus first called Peter out of the boat to follow him, Jesus returned there to call him once again. He did not leave Peter in his failure. And like Peter returned to fishing, we often return to formal survival strategies. And we medicate. We do what numbs us to the perceived reality of hopelessness and failure that we exist in. Whether it be laziness or workaholism, licentiousness or legalism, abandonment of relationships, or increased religious devotion to ease the guilt, substance abuse or porn, false humility or rage. Medicating comes in all forms. So what do you do when your hope is lost?
Thank you for listening. For more of our podcasts and to discover how you can connect, visit us at churchak.org or download our Church on the Rock AK app from either iTunes or Google Play.